This is Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm with Cheryl Benson, an Ames resident. Cheryl contacted me last week about bringing a group of foreign delegates to KHOI. They were Open World Rumsfeld Delegate Fellows, and they included government employees and media people from Afghanistan, Mongolia, Georgia, and Armenia. Of course, everybody still wants to know, how did these folks end up in Ames, Iowa, and how did they end up at KHOI? I've asked Cheryl to explain.
There are three organizations involved in helping us host the delegates that came here. The first is the Rumsfeld Foundation.
Started by Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense.
Exactly. This particular program was started in 2008, so it would have been after his term. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that during his official capacity, he did go to Central Asia, the Caucasus, Afghanistan, and Mongolia, and met some amazing people, and realized that it was a key part of our world. There was a lot going on over there, to say the least. The program is 6 weeks long, and what they do is they meet with top policymakers, public officials, business leaders, etc., at Washington, D.C. The purpose is to foster better understanding and stronger relations between the United States and the countries of the region. And then there's a Open World Leadership Center, which is actually an independent government agency of our Congress. Mm-hmm. The open world aspect really is to have the field fellows move outside of Washington, D.C. to other parts of our country. And those two organizations worked together, and they ended up in Ames through Friendship Force International.
And now, who is Friendship Force International?
Friendship Force is a nonprofit cultural organization that promotes understanding, cultural education, and citizen diplomacy through homestays or journeys. So travel from one country to another or other parts of our own country.
We have a Friendship Force organization here in Central Iowa.
Absolutely.
Is it in Ames or where is it?
It's in Ames. Mm-hmm. Roger Bertelson is our co-president. So Friendship Force International contacted Friendship Force Central Iowa and asked if we were interested in hosting a group. We said yes. There were six that came here, and there were seven that went to Hartford, Connecticut. So I don't know what their experience was mm-hmm. like, but those were the two locations that Open World chose for this particular group.
That's kind of an honor to be one of two locations representing the United States.
We were thrilled. Uh-huh. We were very thrilled, yes. Yeah. It was a wonderful experience for all of us. The group that came here was focused primarily on accountable governance.
And these people were all employees of their governments on some level?
Yes, except for one. One was employed with the media.
Okay, so that explains how they got here to Ames. And then how did they end up here at KHOI?
There was a group of five of us from Friendship Force Central Iowa that were the planning team. We wanted to have people in our community to hear from the people that were coming to visit us, the delegates, the fellows. So we asked KHOI if we could come and visit. Community radio was a great way to do that.
So let's listen to what the delegates said.
My name is Paramdash, and I'm from Mongolia. I work for a media group in Mongolia, and I'm in charge of a news TV channel in operation for 21 years, which was actually opened in cooperation with the American group called the Hmong Foundation. In the early 1990s, when Mongolia opened up to the world, and we embarked on a road for democracy and market economy, and some of the leaders of the Democratic Party believed that opening a news TV was a good thing, and to introduce the democratic values. And then they seeked some assistance from America. And they got trainings and assistance from CNN for about 5-6 years. And we had also assistance from Fox News.
CNN and Fox News responded?
Yes, that's right.
Are you protected by a Mongolian constitution as media? You have the equivalent of a First Amendment?
Yes, we have the equivalent of First Amendment. We are trying to develop this investigative journalism. We have this big sensation going on related to offshore accounts because of the Panama Papers, and then we try to dig.
Mongolia is located both near Russia and China, but Mongolia has been independent from both.
Yeah, we have two neighbors. Both of them are great big nations in terms of territory, in terms of power.
Describe Mongolia.
Mongolia is known for Genghis Khan, who was a great leader. He united the different tribes of Mongolia in 1206.
Genghis Khan.
And then he tried to reach to half of Poland, half of Hungary, and all of China and all of Russia. We became independent in 1911 from the Manchu dynasty, which occupied all China and Mongolia. And then in 1921, we became a second communist country because of Soviet intervention. And then in 1990s, we became Democratic Mongolia. And some people say that Mongolia is a democratic island sandwiched between two big neighbors who are not often democratic.
What was different about the new initiative of democracy?
In the previous independence movement in 1911, we wanted to follow the models of Switzerland or France and Germany. But because of the Soviet domination, we couldn't make our own choice. And this time we really made our choice. And then we decided to follow the British model, where you have parliamentary democracy. In parliament, you have many people who will make decisions and who cannot be easily dominated by either powers.
How does a country like that make a transition into a democracy?
In 1989, we had the first demonstrations against communist rule, and Soviet Union withdrew their troops from Mongolia, and then we felt sudden breath of freedom, and Mongolia decided to move forward.
Were people united in this idea, or were there people that felt, no, we don't want to do this?
The dominating climate was people were united in this change, and the moderates dominated in the protest movements, and they decided to make the transition peaceful. We are proud that we made it without any bloodshed.
It's very interesting to hear you describe what's happening in Mongolia. Do you have community radio in Mongolia? Do you know?
Yes, we have community radios. And I was traveling to one of the Western IMAX, and they had around 1,000 herder families, and they had a community radio aired on the street. And the social media is also playing a bigger and bigger role. And I came to know about KHOI radio and then how they're engaging their community at a grassroots level. It's such an inspiring case. My impression is that democracy is not for parliamentarians or political parties or top-down, you know, agenda. It's the community and the people themselves. They have to care for democracy and they have to contribute to it. And I'm impressed by the American citizens. They for this community radios and this communication at the grassroots level.
You live in a rural or an urban area?
I live in a city. It's Ulaanbaatar. This is a capital city, 1.2 million, which is equal to all the Facebook accounts of Mongolians.
And does it look like an American city? Or?
I would say it's quite different from American city because we had a lot of Soviet time architecture. And recently we have a lot of Hong Kong style of skyscrapers and tall buildings.
So it's also a very modern city.
Yes. And we have also the traditional old round-shaped felt houses that the nomads use.
Hello, my name is Edward Abrahamian, and I'm from Armenia. I am a co-founder of the Council for Cooperation with NATO based in Yerevan. Simultaneously, I'm conducting my PhD research, and the area of my professional expertise is Eastern European security, security in the South Caucasus and the Black Sea. Armenia is an emerging democracy. It's a parliamentary democracy. Armenia declared its pro-Western part since 1991-1992, once it regained its independence. But it found itself somewhat isolated from the regional processes, sandwiched between Azerbaijan, which is an adversary over the Nagorno-Karabakh dispute, and Turkey, the NATO country which closed the border with Armenia.
You have a very clear identity of your own.
We have our clear identity. We have a roughly 3,000 old history of statehood and rich history and culture. But because Armenia experienced a U-turn from the European integration, we are in profound perplexity in how to identify the political path for development of the country and the society. Armenia is highly dependent on Russia in terms of energy and security. In 2014, Armenia became more exposed because of Russia's attempt to impose economic and security framework alternatives to the West. On the other hand, Armenia experienced difficulties in its economy because of that U-turn. So this is a very complex situation for the country, and it needs to overcome it as soon as it is possible.
What is the highest priority right now for Armenia in terms of addressing this dangerous situation?
to pursue balanced foreign policy, a good relationship with all neighbors as much as it is possible, and balanced and deep relationship with Russia and the West, which is very hard to pursue at the moment because of the mounting standoff between these two poles.
I can see both in the tone of your voice and your whole demeanor, it's an extremely serious situation at this time.
Yeah, because of the occupation of Crimea initiated by Russia, the security threats and challenges became more real and grave for the countries surrounded the Black Sea region since 2014. The cooperation with the United States is imperative. I hope this is the region where the United States is able to make a difference. The growing stance of the United States is of paramount importance for the neighbors of Russia. In order to boost the security and in order to enhance the defensibility of the countries.
There's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
I'm Tengiz Khaladze. I'm from Georgia. It's a country near the Black Sea. I work in government.
Could you give us a little bit of sense of what is happening in Georgia?
Regrettably, we were part of Soviet Union, suffering from the occupation, but these 25 years we are independent. And Georgia is the democracy of reforms into the region. We are presidential republic, it's a multicultural democracy. We have free media, and we have separation of power like the United States. Our soldiers were together in Afghanistan. Georgia is a partner of the United States, and I'm really happy. We enjoy bipartisan support from the United States.
And is there concern?
Concern about Russia, it's always exists in our region because what we're witnessing, and not just in Georgia, but in all neighboring countries of Russia, there is really very big tension. So Georgia, Ukraine, everywhere you can find that Russia is engaged. And of course, not just we, but all European security is suffering. That's why it's necessary to strengthen our cooperation and strengthen our ties.
And what do you do in that?
We try to develop cooperation projects. We will engage many countries. Probably are aware about the Silk Road project.
What is the Silk Road project?
Transportation routes which will link east and west, like railway transportation, new road constructions.
Are you optimistic about democracy developing further in Georgia? It sounds like that's a lot of what you're doing.
Pretty sure. And 90% of Georgian population support EU integration and 80% supports NATO integration. So we are keen in our strategic choice.
So you're saying you're optimistic because you feel this is what people want.
Yeah, this is the public demand and, of course, government follow.
I'm Farishta Sahi. Currently, I'm an independent consultant doing a lot of work on human rights and democracy in Afghanistan. I work with women rights NGOs, promoting women inclusion in peace process, women political participation, and also advocating for economic independence of women.
Women are going to school now in Afghanistan?
Yes, after the collapse of Taliban and with the intervention of United States and our other allies and friends, fortunately, Afghan women and girls are going to schools, and they are making very good progress in different sectors.
I'm Basir Yusufi, and I'm from Afghanistan. I work at the Ministry of Interior. Our department is responsible for coordinating our relations with different partners that we have, different countries, the U.S., NATO, and other in the country. What we do is make sure that the assistance which is provided are used to achieve the goal of a more effective, credible, and honest police forces.
It's a complex situation right now for you.
Yes, it is actually. We have been facing the problem of terrorism for a long time now. At the same time, the police forces have to focus on fighting crimes. At the same time, fighting terrorism, which is a very difficult thing to do. We have been facing this problem for a long time. Taliban have been fighting in Afghanistan and doing all sorts of horrible things. And more recently, there have been the presence of ISIS in Afghanistan, which is also a serious threat to the country, but also to the region.
You are clearly isolating them as not part of the mainstream of Afghanistan.
I refer to the Taliban as terrorist groups because that's what they are doing in Afghanistan. They are killing security forces. They are indiscriminately attacking schools, mosques, and markets, gatherings of the people. Taliban unfortunately ran the country for 4 to 5 years, depending on different parts of the country, but that was one of the darkest periods of our history. If we compare this period to the time of the Taliban, there is a complete change.
Explain.
During the Taliban, there was only boys who went to school, and the total number was not more than 1 million in total. But now there are 8 to 9 million students going to school. About 40% are young girls. There is tens of media outlets, TV channels, radios, and so on, which didn't exist at the time of the Taliban at all. They banned all the TV networks. They had only one radio that was their own and propagating terrorism.
Do you think community radio is possible in Afghanistan?
Actually, there are tens of them now in Afghanistan trying to communicate with the community, accountability issues, but also to have a broader broadcasting of what different people want and what different people say.
You're obviously young enough to have grown up with all of this transitions happening in your country. You grew up during a time of war in your country. You probably even grew up during a time of the Taliban in your country. What is this like for you?
I think the worst time that I have experienced was the time of the Taliban. They undermined all the government institutions, our cultural heritage. As you know, they destroyed the Bamiyan sculptures. That was the biggest sculptures in the world. They also destroyed a lot of the local traditions and local institutions, all bringing on their own interpretation of religion and culture and everything. We have a very old culture, about 5,000 years. Afghanistan is very famous for its hospitality, for its poetry, for it is some of the greatest scholars, poets. So it's not just about terrorism that unfortunately we have been facing in the past few years, but it is a lot more than that. We have a very rich literature. We have many local languages and traditions.
We lived in a dark period during Taliban, but I think it's also important to know that before Taliban, Afghanistan was an open society. It was not a closed society. And now we are reinstating that situation. We are restoring that situation. It has opened a new chapter for all Afghan women. So the whole inclusion of women in the political spectrum, in the economic spectrum of life, that's very uplifting. And Afghan women remains highly thankful, especially to the U.S. women organizations and individual women who extended a great deal of support. And we had several organizations that spoke very vocal during Taliban regime, like Feminist Majority in D.C., and they were our voice.
These people made a difference.
Yes, women rights advocates in the United States and around the world were our voice during those dark period. And we remain thankful to them, and we count on their support for further help and for further projects that can really bring economic independence and that can educate more Afghan women and that can ensure women participation in the political life of our country.
Are you optimistic?
Yes, I think Afghans have shown during all these periods of civil war and invasions that we are resilient people. We just need the right kind of support. We don't want Afghanistan to be a safe haven for all the terrorist groups. We need the United States and our NATO allies and other partners to stay active with us in fighting war on terror.
I very much like that I am serving my country, working for its improvement. I was here in the United States. I was a Fulbrighter here, but I went back to contribute to rebuilding and establishing peace to my country. And so what I would like to say here, first of all, to the American people, that we thank them for the continuous support and assistance that have provided, and also for their support in the fight against terrorism, which is a security threat not only to Afghanistan, but also to the U.S. and the whole world. I'm optimistic. We now have a democratic government, which is elected by the people. We have the parliament. We have a very strong civil society. We have a very strong media, and millions of people are going to school. I'm optimistic. We have no choice. We have to continue to work for improvement. The good thing is that people have experienced the time of the Taliban. A lot of time when extremists want to take power, they promise very fancy things to the people, and in that way they can win over some of them. But in our case, in Afghanistan, we have experienced the Taliban, and they were the worst, that they are no longer an option. So there is very little public support, and with the support of the people, I'm very hopeful and optimistic.
Thank you very much. Thank you. This is Ursula Rudenberg for Local Talk, and you've been hearing from Open World Rumsfeld Delegates Fellows who were visiting Ames from the countries of Afghanistan, Mongolia, Armenia, and Georgia. They were brought to KHOI by Central Iowa's Friendship Force. Cheryl Benson of Ames introduced them to us. Is there a website for Friendship Force?
There is a website for the Friendship Force International, mm-hmm. and from that you can look at clubs all over the world, friendshipforceinternational.org.
Friendshipforceinternational.org. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I want to thank KHOI for this opportunity to have a broader reach than we were able to one-on-one throughout the community.
Well, it's our pleasure. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.